Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. We are back with another chapter from One with the Wilderness by Mike Minton. Actually had a little hiccup in our recording schedule there. I had to run down the mountain last week to get some work done on my truck and forgot I was supposed to record an episode before I left. And so in order to get it posted and keep our time line rolling on Tuesdays and Thursday postings, we had to insert a pre-recorded podcast, one of my interview podcasts there. So if you thought, wait a second, I thought we were supposed to get a Mike Minton episode, you're right. So I dropped the ball on that one, but we're back. In the meantime, I just wanted to give you a reminder that that special that Mike Minton's running, where every order of Chasing Solitude or Blu-ray, the standard def or the Blu-ray edition, sold during the rest of the month of May, will receive a copy of the Primal Dreams condensed version. And then you'll also be in the chance for a drawing for the for an autographed copy of One with the Wilderness. The orders must be placed through herdbullproductions.com to qualify. So buying it out of Three Rivers isn't going to work. And then he'll have the drawing June 6th for that copy of the book there. And he's working on a limited run reprint of the black and white copy of the One with the Wilderness. The color version, you know, with the color pictures, is sold out. So kind of a collector's item. And that's actually what I'm reading you from. So, man, maybe I should be very careful turning these pages and not dog-earing the pages for markers. That drives my wife crazy. I usually, instead of using a bookmark, I dog-ear the pages, just fold them over, you know, at the end of where I've stopped reading. Although, purely by accident, I'm using a sticky note on this one here. So now that I know that this is a collector's edition, I'm glad that I'm not dog-earing the pages, lest I reduce the value, although this one won't ever part with me. Man, I'm just realizing that this is not even signed. Mike, you are slacking. Nope. Aha, I take that back. It is signed. So, yeah, signed in 2009. So some history with this book here. I'll have to look. I can't remember if the other copies that I've got are color or the early black and white ones. But in any case, we are on Chapter 3, Dawn to Dusk. It was noon on a beautiful October day. I had been in my tree stand since 6 a.m. when I heard the rhythmic rustle of a running deer. Knocking an arrow, I frantically searched for the location of the deer when I spotted him running along the ridge towards me. I soon saw he was a mature animal. Not wanting to risk a running shot, I quickly tapped my arrow against the riser of my bow. This sound quickly locked the deer up 15 yards downhill from me. The buck was statue-like, listening for the cause of the noise when my arrow passed through his vitals. He made it to the bottom of the ridge before he collapsed. Arrowing a 10-point Minnesota trophy was a direct result of time spent in the woods. If taking a buck that is representative of the largest in your area is one of your goals, you are losing an important advantage by not hunting the entire day. Everyone realizes the common increased deer movement during the few hours after and before sunrise and sunset. Consequently, this corresponds to increased human activity too. One great way to hunt disturbed deer is to stay in your stand all day, thus not become part of the problem. Staying in a single stand all day will answer many questions about deer movement in that area. There will be fewer gaps in your gnawing curiosity about what's it like when I'm not there. Even if you witness little or no deer movement, you will still acquire valuable information, so adjustments can be made. No time spent in the woods is wasted. All-day stand locations are a must for sites in or near known bedding areas. Tromping into and out of bedding areas would be the same as having somebody chase you out of your bedroom every night. Being a passive individual, your only recourse would be to move. This is what deer will do if they detect constant intrusion. To prevent this, you should get into your stand quietly, leaving the area as undisturbed as possible. Then, as you have successfully reached your stand, stay put. By staying all day, you will overcome most of the deer senses. I employ a plan of stand rotations depending on wind direction and observations made during the season. I don't overhunt any one stand, and my results indicate that this is a good strategy. In areas of heavy hunting pressure or other human activity, the rut becomes a blessing. No matter how much the pressure, big bucks won't be completely nocturnal during the rut. Many times you'll have to utilize midday hunting time to get a glimpse of the reigning buck. Cheering on your favorite football team at home won't cut it. I remember the last day of October one season. I was in a natural tree stand surrounded by a dense thicket when a doe and two fawns moved into view. It was 1:30 p.m. They milled around the thicket for over 2 hours, unaware of the silent observer pressed against the oak. It was almost 4 p.m. when the family was alerted by the approach of another deer. It was a buck. As he advanced on the doe, she quickly moved away. Not wanting this game of tag to leave the protection of the thicket, the mature buck tried not to appear too aggressive while making his intentions known. I eventually got a good look at the buck and could tell he was the same basic 6x6 that I had passed up the previous season, only this year he had turned into the 17-pointer I saw in velvet during July. As the doe led him out of sight, I hoped it wouldn't be the last I'd see of him. I sat there in the quiet while the sun slowly fell to the horizon. Abruptly, the doe came back towards me, looked to her back trail, then moved on. I could see the feet of her follower and hoped they didn't belong to one of her fawns. Although the emergence of the ivory rack was reward enough for the day-long sit, I still hoped for a shot. If the buck took the same path as the doe, I knew I would be left with no shot. But in his apparent attempt to herd the doe, the buck swung wide and came to within 10 yards of my tree. I drew my 80-pound bow as the buck stepped into my limb-free shooting lane. As the Thunderhead 24-19 arrow penetrated the top of the shoulder blade, I knew a clean kill would be imminent. After a half-hour wait, I quickly located the downed buck. His 180-inch gross typical 12-point frame was over 20 inches wide inside and supported 5 additional sticker tines. Because I shot this buck just before dark, one could argue that I didn't have to spend so much time in the tree. In response, though, let me point out that the doe which aided me in taking this fine trophy made her appearance at 1:30. If I had climbed into that tree at 2 o'clock, I would have run out my greatest asset out of the thicket. Although stand hunting has been proven to be a very successful means of hunting big deer, you may not want to limit yourself to only this method. In areas of less human activity, I sometimes still hunt between morning and evening stands. The wind direction, temperature, and ground conditions are some of the factors that would enter into my decision. When it is really cold, a midday still hunt can be mentally and physically rewarding. I have taken several bucks while hunting on the ground between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. After leaving my morning stand at 11 a.m. one day in Illinois, bow season, I sat down to eat a candy bar and an apple. These items were sealed in a Ziploc bag in my day pack to avoid deer smelling them. Shortly after, I began my methodic still hunt to my evening stand location. 15 minutes later, I was alerted by the distinct odor of a rutting deer. My grip on the bow tightened as I noticed a nice buck walking broadside to me. His taut neck was outstretched and parallel to the ground. A drop tine was evident on the side of his antlers as he disappeared behind a small knoll. I crept forward and crouched to the ground, waiting for him to move into the open, tested my patience. As he reappeared from behind the knoll, I instinctively raised my bow. His upper back was the only thing visible above the high grass. Coming to full draw, my hand touched my cheek and the arrow was on its way. The buck immediately dropped as the broadhead severed his spinal cord. After dispatching the animal, I knelt beside him and admired his unique headgear. His high rack was blessed with 3 drop tines, 2 over 8 inches. Needless to say, I never reached my evening stand. The buck was later officially scored for Pope and Young at 156 1/8 non-typical points. Without the drop tines, the basic 6-point rack would have scored 136 3/8 after symmetry deductions between the sides. I judged this deer to be over 7 years old based on his tooth wear. It's not only the case that you must endure hours of patience while waiting to see a mature buck. You may not have to go through the initiation ceremony of straining every muscle or withstanding every cold shiver prior to collecting your trophy. Another personal experience illustrates this point vividly. Prepared as I was to spend a day in an Illinois tree, my vigil was cut short. The rays of the dawning sun carried with them the sound of a series of 6 quick grunts. My heart raced, as I knew this hyperventilating buck was with a very receptive doe. I only wished for him to be one of the 10 pointers I had seen earlier. The doe was the first animal to travel down the trail towards me. 50 yards behind her, I witnessed the arrival of her potential mate. Moving forward, the doe was now directly below me. My attention focused on the buck, which was standing in a scrape while rubbing his antlers through the overhanging limb. This was textbook. In my peripheral vision, I could see the doe become nervous as she passed my stand. It felt great to be between the doe and the biggest buck I had seen that season. As the buck continued his pursuit, my concentration shifted from the thick 21-inch wide 10-point rack to the strapping muscles and ribcage just behind the shoulder. Seeing that an oak obstructed my going-away shot, I had to wait for him to be directly broadside. This would prove more difficult than it sounded because my stand was only 11 feet up and the buck was 3 yards from the base of my tree. Even though the buck had already been alerted to some danger by the doe, he recklessly tried to get past me. He caught movement as my bow limbs stressed under full draw. Upon release, he bolted away, leaving the arrow buried deeply in the earth where he had just stood. I heard him stop in the thicket from which he had gone. The anger caused by my poor performance coupled with the flowing adrenaline gave me the shakes. However, the fact that the buck had not left the area kept me from completely coming apart. While listening for the buck's next move, I heard the grunting approach of yet another buck, also preceded by a doe in heat. He let out a loud, drawn-out grunt while staring in the direction of the buck I had just missed. The second buck's rack looked to score in the middle of 120s, and I allowed him and the doe to walk past me. After getting downwind of me, their chase accelerated down the ridge. The presence of another receptive doe and an interfering male were too much for the big buck to handle. He shook his head from side to side as he freed himself from the thicket. His drive to reproduce was greater than fear, and the commotion that disturbed him earlier was forgotten as he came towards me for the second time. There was a small red oak between us with dry brown leaves still held fast to its limbs. This barrier broke our eye contact. With regained composure, once again I drew on the buck. He moved out from behind the tree, presenting me with a 20-yard broadside shot. The lung-shot deer fled in earnest down into a honeysuckle-choked ravine. Only 30 minutes of daylight had elapsed into this hunt. I sat there for 1 hour, giving him a chance to die, staring at my first arrow stuck in the ground before me. I pondered my mistake. Fortunately for me, the buck's mistake was greater. After climbing down, I discovered the blood trail to my prize was obvious. With delicate motion, I lifted his head and ran my hands along his 25-inch beams. They carried nearly 5-inch thickness measurements throughout. The tines were long and stout. After the symmetry deductions, the official score was 164 3/8 Pope and Young. The buck proved to be at least 6.5 years old. This was surprising, given that the clean 10-point rack had no bifurcations or sticker tines. Being prepared for long hunts ahead of time is the key to overcoming impatience. A day pack is necessary to carry dry clothing and plastic bags as well as additional items. If I'm not wearing any polypropylene underwear that wicks moisture away from the skin, I sometimes strip down to change from a sweaty shirt before getting into my tree, always sealing the soiled shirt in a plastic bag to minimize odor. As mentioned, any food I bring along is sealed in plastic. Many disadvantages of food are outweighed by psychological advantages. However, I don't recommend 7-course meals. Too much food intake makes it harder to suppress the urge to defecate. Also, eating heavy meals while out in cold weather makes you feel even colder, as much of your blood is redirected to the needs of your digestive tract. Water is an essential item I always carry in my pack. Drinking will prevent dehydration, cramped muscles, quench your thirst, keep you warmer, and relax your mind. All of these will keep you in the woods longer and help maintain your state of readiness. Being mentally prepared to hunt all day is really important. Finding big sheds in your hunting area, sighting big bucks in velvet, and locating rubs and scrapes, as well as sighting bucks during the season, all make it easier to hunt all day. Knowing that he's out there gives you the mental edge. As your confidence builds, so will success. Be it sighting more or bigger bucks or shooting the buck you're after, success breeds more success. The use of gimmicks that build your confidence and keep you hunting can also pay off. If they increase your patience, you will be utilizing the ultimate gimmick, time spent in the woods. Who knows? With additional time spent in the woods becoming more of a part of it, you may even have more fun. So as I was reading this chapter, one of the things I was thinking about was how much of a bummer it was that you guys aren't checking out all the cool pictures in the book. And I had an idea as I was reading that I should take pictures of the pictures and post them up on Instagram, along with the podcast notification posting. So that's what I'm going to do from here on out. I'll take pictures of these chapters here, the pictures that illustrate these chapters, and I'll post them up along with the podcast notification. So as you guys listen to the podcast, you can look back on those pictures from the post there and see which bucks Mike was referencing, because, oh man, he has shot some corkers, let me tell you. Makes me green with envy, especially when I think about all that excellent whitetail meat that went into the freezer. And if you're a Western hunter and you have not eaten whitetail, boy, I tell you, you are in for something right there, man. I absolutely love it. It's my wife's favorite. And don't worry, we covered obviously a ton of whitetail stuff so far, and the out west stuff is coming soon. In fact, the next chapter is entitled Do-It-Yourself Hunt in Alaska. So that ought to perk up a few ears. That'll be chapter 4 on the next read. All right. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and don't forget about that special Mike is running.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I've gone down.